right, can we get started again, folks? Welcome back. Thank you. County Attorney Jonathan.
As the chair mentioned, we'd like a brief executive session to discuss the litigation, but other than that, I have no report.
Thank you. Finance Director David.
I just wanted to explain, before the meeting, I passed out a sheet and put it in your box. This is a result, on one side you have a spreadsheet. We toured properties that are exposed to foreclosure, and this sheet lists those 19 or so properties, and it has a brief description of what we found. In this listing of properties, there are four abandoned structures in various one. Burned out to the ground to ones that have four walls and open windows and some vacant wooded lots. And then on the other side of that document, I just wanted to show you, we post the properties, we mail the notices that we visited, and this is a sample of the letter we sent to the people after visiting as well as having posted on the site, just to make sure. And the surprising thing about this year's visits, in the past, there'd be messages on my phone before I get back to the office. There's not been one call from any of the properties that I visited. And four of them are occupied with, some are rental properties. Two I know are owner-occupied. So that's kind of a concern.
Did you say you put those in our boxes?
Yes.
Okay.
Any questions for David?
And we do have an auction scheduled for June the 15th for these properties.
Thank you very much, David. Any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Mike?
I'd like to withdraw Resolution B.
Thank you. That's withdrawn. And the hope is to bring that back in 2 weeks.
Yes.
So, thank you very much. The only items on the consent agenda are two appointments to the Air Service Board, Anthony Hobson, and Environmental Management Council, Eric Van Avery. Do you have a motion on the consent agenda, Frank? And Dooley, Leslin seconds. All in favor of the consent agenda?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Pam McAsey, Chair.
We will meet tomorrow. Wednesday at the old jail, and that's my report.
Thank you very much. Census Committee.
Okay, the Census Committee. I do have something to report. First place, on your mailbox, on top of the mailboxes in the other room, are posters. These posters. And people should take one or several and take them to your districts and find places to put them up if you want to. I'm not requiring you. April 1st was of course the National Census Day, and we had events on the commons. We had tchotchkes to give away in all the communities in Tompkins County. I don't know what all the towns and villages were given these things to hand out, and we tried to make an event out of the day. Phone calls are being made by census workers to Tompkins County residents. We started with the areas that have post office boxes, the geographic locations that have a lot of post office boxes, and made phone calls to talk to people about letting them know if they haven't gotten a census form, how they can get one. On the 10th, and we are now moving, we are now doing the city. They are making calls in the city. On the 10th of, which is this coming Saturday, we're having an event in College Town. It's going to be from 12 until 4 o'clock. Of course, as we know, the College Town area is a hard-to-count area. Historically, we have had not a great participation there. So this is an event, a way to try and generate some some more people to sign census forms. There's going to be a disc jockey from 12 until 4. We're going to have hats and T-shirts and a raffle, and also Kevin is just cooking things up like mad. And so that'll be 12 to 4 right at Collegetown, outside in that outside area of Collegetown Bagels, which is great. And then the last thing I wanted to say is that I have been daily making a note of how we are doing online in terms of our participation rates. And if I had a drum, I would do a drum roll. And the number one village or town in the Tompkins County right now is Freeville. They have a participation rate of 77%. I should have started at 5. Oh well. I'm not used to doing this. Let's see. So number 2 is Ulysses. Ulysses has, I wish Jim was here. They have a participation rate of 74%. And T-Burg, which we all see on our map up here, is the area in red. This year is at 73%, and that's really great. Groton is at 73%. Lansing and the town of Lansing and Cayuga Heights are both at 71%, and Caroline is at 5%. It's number 5 at 70%. Okay, and then I just want to point out that there's a real need and reason why we're doing this thing on Saturday in Collegetown, because as comparison to everybody else, the Collegetown area is at 33%, so we really need to spend some time there. And the city has been actively involved in helping us do this. Our county rate is 65%, which is really very good. I found it interesting that New York State, we have a 56% percentage rate, which is lower than almost any state. Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Arkansas, any of those states across the South, New York State is really lagging this time, and it's very worrisome. The national participation rate is at 60%, so Tompkins County has a participation rate greater than the national average. I think Wisconsin is the state with the highest participation rate, and I think there is something like 73%. So there's my census report, and this is moving towards the last 3 weeks of this, and then the enumerators will be out knocking on people's doors who didn't return their forms. We got a bit of good news today that they are going to send enumerators to Collegetown earlier than they are other places. In general, they don't send them out until after the first of the month, first of May. But because we are having a struggle there, and in general, Collegetown, from what I spoke with a woman in Boston today, and she said that it's really sort of a problem everywhere, because of course students finish their classes and then they're sort of scatter. So they are supposed to have some people here on the 24th of April, starting on the 24th of April, knocking on doors in Collegetown. So we will keep our fingers crossed and hope that we can make some real progress there.
Thank you, Pam. Those are great statistics and a lot of great information. Kathy and then Mike.
Thank you. I love that map on the internet with the participation rates. It's really interesting. Yeah. One of the things I noticed on it, and help me out with this, is in addition to Collegetown having a low participation rate right now, it looks to me like the downtown core also has a low participation rate. And I'd like to know if the committee has any proposals for improving that participation, because it's very important to city residents for a lot of CDBG block grants and other funding that we assure ourselves of getting adequate and accurate counts.
Well, I think we are making phone calls in the city of Ithaca. They took a voter registration list and are going through and calling people there. I'm trying to get the agencies who are involved in this to make sure that, you know, this is in this last phase. But if you have ideas.
Well, what I like is that the proactiveness of the committee has gotten the census folks to going to College Town before the date that they would ordinarily be going door to door. What I'd be interested in knowing is, in the past, has the door to door effort raised the participation rate from the city? And in that case, I wouldn't worry quite as much as I am right now, but it worries me that it's an area that has low participation, that I'm not sure that we're aware yet why that is this time, and if it's an anomaly, or if it's something that we can do something about. You know, I love that there's parties. I love that there's a lot of excitement and generating a lot of buzz about it. I just like to have a way of being proactive about it. You know, well, I'm willing to stand on street corners with, you know, a sandwich board, whatever it takes, party hats. You'll do it. I offered to wear T-shirts, you know, but so far.
I will say that I have been in communication with the mayor to express the fact that the city really has had more, you know, is sort of lagging. I think she's very aware of that. I think she has been focusing on the College Town. But what I would suggest is that you might email her and say that this is something that you're concerned about. And I think that's something that we should think about and try and do some more stuff downtown. I mean, this is the time to do it. And some of these things take time, but a lot of this just getting is sort of like a pep rally or something, or just getting people going. It just takes a little energy, and I think that's possible still, that we can generate some excitement and get more people involved, and perhaps we can get the radio stations to be a little bit more involved for the next couple of weeks in terms of some of this stuff.
I'm not faulting anybody.
I know one of us
has been pestering everyone we know about the census. Yeah. They see us coming now. I just would wonder if Janice could get us any kind of a history on how the numbers for example, the downtown core of Ithaca change over time, not the necessarily student-centered areas, and if after the door-to-door we'll historically regain. And if so, it's not alarming.
Right.
You know, I'll know how nervous to get.
I think we have that information. I think I think Ruth Aslanis has that, and I think our ITS, no, whoever it is.
I'd appreciate it. It'd be helpful.
Okay, that's good. Thank you.
Mike, and then Peter.
Pam, did you want to mention the progress we've been making with the rural post offices?
I think that would be a great thing for you to mention.
Well, I just, one of the things that Pam's committee, the census committee that we're on, has talked about is the fact that people that have post office boxes in some of the rural communities, and that's the exclusive way they're allowed to get their mail because they don't have door-to-door delivery, have been not sent forms, and that they're going to have to wait for census counters to come around. But some of the folks at the Question Assistance Center in Dryden got on the phone with some of the postmasters, and they're willing to help. And they're distributing forms out to these post offices to have available. So, folks, if you want to get in there, if you got a P.O. box, check at the counter.
Great. Thank you.
That's great. Peter.
I would think you could also get them to put a sign up there saying if you haven't got a census form, you can get one at the counter.
All good ideas.
The question I had was when is it all over, and
I have been asking that for months. When will this ever end?
2020.
Right, 2020. Well, the time frame, the latest t- timeframe I've heard. I've heard, you've heard several dates. But generally, it's the end of April where that they accept the forms. And then the enumerators go out for the month of May. But it may take them longer to do that because they theoretically will go back to each place 6 times if they need to in order to, you know, find somebody home. And I think that our role in it will end, in another 3 weeks.
Yeah, but I was asking a broader question.
Oh, broader.
When do we look? The burning question is, are we under 100,000 or over 100,000?
Oh, yeah.
So when do we know the answer to that question?
Oh, that's going to take a while. I don't think they'll come out with those figures because they do all this sort of follow-up, and I'm sure they do some sort of analysis, and they may do a sampling, or I don't know. I think that my memory, and my memory, it can be faulty, is that we aren't going to get figures until towards the end of the year.
Carol Leslin and Brian.
Yeah, I want to thank Pam. Has done just an incredible job with a big group, a tough situation, you have to recreate this once a decade with changing players. There are some overlaps of being here decade after decade, but I won't say who, Frank. But for the most part, you're sort of having to recreate the wheel, and so it's. I know it's been an awful lot of work. I think one of the distinctions in terms of the dates is that people should send their forms back by April 16th at the latest. They should send them back tomorrow because it creates more angst for all of us. But if you don't send it back by April 16th, I think the date is, or around that period, it really creates more work for the Census Bureau. Once you haven't sent it back, you are put on lists. They have to start sending people door to door. And for each round of that, it gets more and more expensive. So please send them back. And then my understanding is that if there are still groups out there or people, individuals, small or large groups who want to do something to get the word out to your population, we have resources to do that. And you can get in touch with Kevin. And there are leaflets that you can pick up and put in a spot that we may not have thought of. There are door hangers, there are posters, there are tchotchkes. Come to a central site, to this thing in College Town on the weekend. What else? I just had here. There's a little keychain thing with a hand. Your hand counts, in addition to the cups and the T-shirts. So there's plenty more that people can do, and if you want to do it, get a group. Be willing to go door-to-door, sticking leaflets somewhere. There's room for that. So please consider doing it.
Leslie.
Since I can't say that word, where do these come from? What is it? Tchotchkes? Okay. I say Mecha Mecha. Where are they from?
The Census Bureau gave us all of this. This is our taxpayer dollar.
Thank you. I just thought I'd ask.
All of this. We all paid for this. So
I thought I'd ask. And to add to the buzz and a word of encouragement for people who are especially of African-American descent and are sensitive to our eyes zero in on certain words very quickly. And I know that this caused its own buzz because of the appearance of the word Negro in the census forms. And I want to encourage people who are out there, regardless, to fill it out. Of course, the Census Bureau has given its own explanation and reasoning for it. For many of us, it was, the words to choose from were Negro and colored, and the choice went to the winner was Negro. In addition to you know, part of that form that our Latino population is having some difficulties with, although our Latino population is, regardless, has said, you know, we're just going to respond, you know, and you know, the highest responding group among our minority population. So it's a little difficult to sort of look at that. I have not sent in my census form because every time I open it, I start laughing. But I do want to encourage people that, you know, we can talk about that battle and discuss it more later. I don't like putting things off for later, but to just fill out the forms and send them in because it's really important for us to count. But the explanation that the Census Bureau, the census folks give is not necessarily satisfactory to us, especially given the demographics of the African-American population, the older population to whom that is supposed to appeal because they identify themselves as Negro or colored in the South, aren't that many as the younger population. So it comes across as a little offensive, a lot offensive. And I know that there's some people who just don't even want to deal with it if that's where we're going. But I do want to stand here and encourage people to please just fill it out and send it in. Some people may not and may just wait until the enumerators come around. Hence, some of the lower numbers in the downtown core, where we have a high concentration of people of color, that might be one of the reasons as well. So just to be aware of that, but I have to point it out.
Thank you. Thank you, Leslie. Brian, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I did, but actually it was answered. I wanted to know, you know, how we were doing on that 100,000 person figure, and I guess we can't get that, which is probably the reason for the census in the first place.
Yeah, that's right.
Kathy?
Thank you. Leslie, I'm glad you brought up some of the controversy around what people are called on the census. Colorofchange.org, which is an advocacy group for African Americans and blacks, has an action campaign encouraging people to do whatever is comfortable for them,
right.
Either cross it out or, you know, write it in or whatever. And, and as a Latina, I was faced with a dizzying array of choices of how to identify myself. And, you know, the other box is very helpful, and then you can just write in what you want to. As an LGBT person who's in a long-term committed relationship, there's no place to be counted, but there are ways that you can count yourself and be counted as a spouse. Checking off, one partner can check off husband or wife, another can check off. I posted about it on Facebook, and Pat's looking at me. There's a number of ways to approach it, depending on which organization you talk to, and that's the problem with all of these designations, is that the census isn't very current in the way that it deals with the diverse populations in this country. But we're working on that. And part of the way we can get more voice in working on it is by filling it in and mailing, filling it out and mailing it in. That's the phrase.
That's right. Will.
Question for Pam, or any member of the committee. If one has misplaced the form, which I have not because I filled out mine right away, but if you've misplaced it, what is the procedure?
Well, we have Be Counted centers around the community. We also have the QAC centers that people can go to. There's one at the library, public library. There's one at the mall.
So these would be blank forms?
These are blank forms, and they will give them to you, and you fill them out, and they take them. And there are a number of them. All of those centers are posted on the county's website that people can find them at. And anybody's always welcome to call me, and I'll try and help them if I can.
Good.
That was my question, too. So, or one of these post offices, I mean, you don't have to live in that area. You can just get a blank form wherever you can find one. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. It doesn't make any difference where you get it in Tompkins County. That's right.
Okay.
And I just quickly Googled U.S. Census and came to the website where I gather you were getting your wonderful data in terms of the participation rate. There's a clickable map, and I saw that the town of Ithaca was tied with the city of Ithaca at 67%, according to their current
map. The town of Ithaca, no, the city of Ithaca is at 53. The town of Ithaca is at 67.
Perhaps I misread. In any case, one can go back forth and see where you are at any given time.
They change it once a day at 4 o'clock.
Ah.
Stock market closes, census opens up.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much, Pam, really. And to second everybody else's kudos on this. It's been a terrific effort, and we really appreciate
it. Well, Kevin Sutherland is the one who has done yeoman work on this. He's just remarkable, and he has been ingenious and inventive. Every barrier that comes along, he's able to figure out how to get around it or through it. And he's done a really wonderful job.
That's great. Thank you so much. Budget and Capital Committee, Kathy, who's her vice chair?
I didn't know I was going to give a report.
Well, your next meeting is Monday, right?
It's funny, Jim didn't even tell me he wasn't going to be here tonight.
Okay. It's a family emergency. So, okay, I believe the next meeting is Monday, 3:30. Okay, Public Safety Committee, Nathan Chinagawa, Chair.
Yes, the Public Safety Committee met yesterday, and we had a very interesting and fact-filled meeting. The meeting started with I won't say how we started because I don't remember exactly the order, but it was a lot of information. But Mike, in regards to the plans, the emergency plans that you were talking about, I'd ask Lee to present about the hazards, kind of vulnerability analysis that the county does. Right, because this is something that I do at my hospital that we have to do. We're required by our regulations to do every year. And so I asked Lee. I said, "Do we do this?" And he said, "Yeah. In fact, we did do this a big evaluation in 2003, 2004, around that time. And other municipalities also did it. Not everybody. I don't think everybody." And so he did go over what it was we looked at. You know, they talked about floods and utilities failures, even all the way up to terrorist acts. And the prior, in terms of the ratings of the risks that are associated with it, it hasn't been updated in a little while, so it might be a good time to start thinking about updating that. So we did have a discussion about that. Probation, Pat Buchel talked about Leandra's Law and its potential effect on the county. Apparently, there's it's with everybody that gets convicted of what was that phrase? It's a
misdemeanor.
If you're a felony or misdemeanor for
DWI.
DWI. Right. As long as you're not, it's like a third, what's the threshold? She had a word for that. It's killing me.
DWI.
I'm not talking about that. Yeah. Yeah, if it's not, right, exactly, yes. Yeah. So anything above violation, so, you know, misdemeanors and felonies, you have to get ignition, what is it called?
Ignition interlock
system, which, you know, you breathe in to start your car. And you have to get it on the vehicles that, remember, people get their licenses taken away, so you still have to get this, though, on the vehicles that you have at your house, right? Because a lot of people that have DUIs and have lost their licenses still drive, and so you have to get them installed. These units cost about $1,200 each. There's of all of the cases in Tompkins County, I think there's what 300 and some cases of that would apply in this situation, and per year. And a good amount of those would be indigent populations. So the question becomes, who would pay for that? And if the county has to pay for that, you know, say it's 200, maybe two hundred people, well, suddenly that becomes a very large sum of money for the county if we have to pay for it. So this is a concern that exists with the law, and I think there's more to come on it. We had a presentation about the second part of our ATI program evaluation, this time focusing on cost analysis. And this was an awesome presentation, and I said many very nice things about this because I was so in awe of the work that was done. And basically what Deanna did is she looked at the cost of the program. I'm sorry, she looked at the savings that ATI yields. And she did that by looking at the reduced number of jail days and the program costs associated. She looked at the savings by looking at the reduced jail days and the program costs associated with each program that relates to that would be that are jail related. So she looks at like board outs, for example, right? And you can actually get pretty close to a number of what it would have cost to jail those people, because if they weren't going to go through these programs, they probably would have been sentenced to about a year in jail, at least, which would have been like 280 or something actual days in our county jail. And so she also looked at, so she considered those savings, so what you would have spent that you didn't have to. Then she looked at the program costs, including the costs for probation, assigned counsel, a mental health counselor, and the facilities. And so when you combine those costs, she looked at those costs and savings. She found that over a five and three quarter of a year period, the total cost to the county after you account for the savings was $250,000. Right? $250,000. Right?
No.
Yes.
It was break even.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was $10,000 a year is what
Estimated total program cost, $2,137,000. Estimated total program savings, $1,892,000. Total net cost, $245,000.
Over 5 years, five and three quarters years. So you divide by five and three quarters.
Yeah.
So it's $14,000 and change a year, wasn't it?
Oh well, I
remember $10,000 a year.
Now, if you were looking at what you're looking at is if you look at just the felony drug treatment court, it's you actually are ahead $14,000 a year through that program, and then with day reporting, it there's actually a cost with it associated with it. So.
Okay, but the general inclusion, the conclusion I got by listening to it is that. It essentially is a wash.
Yeah,
pretty much saves as much as it costs.
Right, right. And so if you look at and so that's the total net cost. But there's also the actual societal gains that are associated with these programs. And so that includes those people that are now getting full-time jobs. We talked about this last time I presented this at our committee report. You know, people that were only in part-time jobs or were completely unemployed, now suddenly having full-time jobs that Deanna estimated would paid about $10 an hour, because some people are going in the trades and they're getting $30 an hour jobs. Some people are getting minimum wage jobs. So she did a conservative estimate of $10 an hour. Also, there's all those individuals who didn't have high school educations who are getting their GEDs, or those going to community college that wouldn't have if they didn't go through these programs. And also, there's the reduction in public assistance, people that no longer need to rely on public assistance programs. And so she quantified all of those, and the total benefit over that period was $4,866,000. And that doesn't include the other benefits that are harder to quantify, such as actually, and this is what Judge Rossiter brought up, when you have a woman who joins the program who's pregnant or gets pregnant during the program, right? Who, if she was not in this program, would have likely continued to have some sort of addiction problem, which means that she would have had a baby that would either have had deformities, abnormalities, or would have been born with an addiction problem, right? And by being in this program, you're basically guaranteeing that during that period, that baby will be born clean. And so the societal benefit to that over the course of that entire baby's life is huge. And so there's things like that isn't in this report that can be quantified, but that we also should consider. And so so overall, it was a very interesting report. Obviously, there is some cost to the counties, but there's also significant savings. And then also the additional economic benefits show that these programs are successful and are a model for the rest of New York State and the nation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nathan. I was interested in particular in a sort of dissection of the city treatment court. There were sort of two significant changes during that period between 2004 and 2009. Where a change in district attorney, where there was a policy change, and a change in the judge. Dina actually looked at the data and looked at the number of cases, looked at the number of graduates, looked at the number of jail days that are used in sanctions, and success rates. And it was really quite stunning. The costs The cost in the latter period, since Gwen Wilkinson's been DA and Judge Rossiter has been in charge of that court, the costs have gone way down and the benefits have gone up. So all that information, I think Dina emailed the Public Safety Committee. Did she email the whole legislature? I don't.
I mean,
I got a report. I didn't notice who was on that, but those reports have been sent. We can certainly make sure everybody gets them.
I would love to see that.
Yeah,
I
don't think
I got it.
Okay.
All right. I will. Carol? Yeah, she only sent it to us.
She just sent it to Public Safety? Okay.
Yeah.
And you send it to all of us?
Yep.
Sure, yeah. Carol?
Well, that's partly what I was going to ask, was whether we could get it. And did it look at, I don't know what you'd call the multiplier effect, the effect of the difference in services that the rest of the family might need with a spouse away at jail versus not, children whose parent is in jail versus not, or whatever other health family and other considerations.
No, I mean that's an additional benefit that you can probably add, but it wasn't included in this report.
She tried to be conservative.
Yeah, and, yeah, she was actually very conservative and used very conservative numbers throughout.
Right.
Also, by the way, there was Peter brought up an interesting point during the meeting. I believe it was Peter when he said, "Well, it's hard to look at these total economic benefits because let's say employment. You know, there's this $4.4 million economic benefit related to employment. But you know, if those people didn't take those jobs, then somebody else would have taken those jobs. So isn't any new benefit?" And what Judge Rossiter talked about, which was really fascinating, was the fact that these individuals were, a lot of them get to her court because they're shoplifting. Right, and they're shoplifting or doing other things to feed their addiction, and they're spending money on drugs, which aren't taxed, right? And so here they're stealing for their addiction, and they're buying things that don't get taxed. When you get them clean and through these programs, and they have a full-time job, and they're spending money at stores, right? Getting sales tax off of that. They're not spending their money on drugs, and so there's that additional benefit. That these people having employment actually has. Mm-hmm.
Peter.
Yeah, well, let me try to say what it was I did say there.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure. Yeah.
The in some sense, I found the presentation mixing apples and oranges. And there are a lot of different questions you can ask about these programs. And one very limited question that you can ask is how much do they cost us as a county government, not how much do they cost us as citizens, so forth. Just look as if the county were a business, and it's got certain obligations, it pays things, and do we actually save money for the county government by having a drug court? That's a very well-defined question, and it's probably the one that could be answered to the greatest accuracy. And as it was a complicated presentation, and I didn't follow all the numbers through it, but the conclusion I came to was that more or less you can say that the drug court doesn't cost us anything, because if we didn't have it, we would have to pay the same expense for, mostly for board outs is what it's about. Since we do have it, we have to pay for a lot of counselors that we wouldn't pay, but the amount of money that we pay for the whole program, including the counselors, is more or less equivalent to the amount of money that we would pay for board outs. So that if you just ask that whole question, it turns out that this program is free. And, I mean, another way of putting it is, suppose we decided as a legislature to just kill this ACCESS program, say we want no more alternatives for education. How much will that save us? And the answer is nothing, to within $10,000 a year. So that, for me, was a very striking answer. But then it got more and more difficult to be sure of. And then there was this question, as Nathan says, is that when people are in, graduate from this program, they get jobs. And they didn't have jobs before, and then that job injects certain money into the economy, and then you can add that up as a benefit. And I was dubious of that. It certainly isn't a benefit to the books of the county government, that's for sure. Whether it's a benefit to the county or not, what was not clear to me, because the point I made, which Nation said clearly, is that if you're limited by the number of jobs you have available, then it doesn't help you at all economically, because if my friend gets the job, your friend doesn't, and it's a wash to the economy of the county. And I think that's more or less true. But of course, then there's the other question you can ask is, what is a saved life worth? How much money are we willing to spend as a county to be able to take a person from a life of crime and what that entails, namely stealing money from people, mugging them, robbing their houses, buying illegal substances, and turn those people into productive citizens? And that's a more complicated question to answer. I'm sure we all agree that it's worth something to do that, but it's hard to put a dollar figure on it. So to me, that was all sort of speculation. But to the extent that you could believe those numbers, I think it gave a very strong argument for the fact that these programs do not cost us any money as a county government.
Nathan?
Yeah, and also I think Dina's report is very consistent with the Government Accountability Office's report about the success of these programs as well. In fact, you read the report in more detail than I did, but wasn't there like a $5, one for every dollar spent, there was a certain amount of gain that came out of it?
Yeah, I read that report fully, and frankly, I found it inconsistent.
Okay.
Because what I read, I didn't sit down and write it with paper, but sort of every one of the programs, they had lots of programs, and they say, well, this program returns $5,000 for every $1,000 that the county puts into it. And I was impressed by those numbers. Now, the numbers that we heard weren't anywhere close to that.
Right, well, yeah.
It was just 1,000 for every 1,000 that they put into it.
Right.
So I was left wondering, was she missing something in her report, or were those people stating it, or were they different programs or different places? But they didn't sound consistent to me.
Right, okay.
I'm going to read them again.
Yeah.
Frank, and then I want to wrap up.
Thanks, Martha. Nathan, the report that Peter is referring to, is that the report that will be sent to us so we can review?
Yes, it? Yes, it will be, and it was sent. I can forward it to her.
You were talking about the GAO report, right?
Oh, the GAO.
No, the report I'm referring to is one that was distributed by
the
ATI group, which was a report by the Government of Colorado on the ATI programs in Colorado.
Yeah,
very
we got
extensive.
That a month ago.
Okay, right.
What works and what doesn't work is the name of the report.
Okay, but the report that Dina distributed to the committee, is that the report that we will get copies of?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Just like you got the first part, you'll get the second.
Peter, did I hear you say that it was the Colorado report that had some of the inconsistencies in it that you were concerned about?
No, the Colorado report left me with the impression that you could document the fact that every dollar that you put into an alternatives program is returned to the county government in some way by $5.
Right. What I was saying is that I was consistent in the sense that they both show that there are successful programs and they have huge economic gain by doing these programs. Mm-hmm. They're consistent in that sense. What Peter's saying is the Colorado report shows that they're even better than what we show here in Tompkins County.
Was there a piece?
So we're more conservative.
Was the question of recidivism answered?
No, that was not addressed.
No.
You mean in Colorado, Frank?
Not all. By the report that was done verbally, I guess, internally to the committee.
Recidivism is another question. I mean, there are lots of questions you can pose, and recidivism is certainly one. That was not addressed in this report. This report limited itself to how much actual money does it cost you to have these programs.
Does the report also describe the income sources to support drug court?
No, the argument is made that if I understood it right, and I'm speaking just off my head without the report in front of me, that the cost of running drug court is also put in as a cost of the program, and that the money saved by not sending people to prison was approximately equal to the money spent by having this whole apparatus of the drug court and the counselors and everything else. It's a wash.
But there's supporting documentation in this report that supports what we think is that analysis.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what...
And are we still
it supports what I just said, yeah.
And this is a report on just the three programs that had been initially...
Three local programs, right?
That's right.
And the questions that some of us asked, and this is probably one you can't answer, the questions that some of us asked at the very beginning when this outline was being put together, was there any reference to any of those questions whatsoever?
What were the questions?
Frank, maybe Frank, can read the report
Nathan, do you know the answer to what
this portion of the report was already well underway by the time we had our last...
Absolutely incorrect. I'm sorry. I hate to disagree with you. When Dina asked for submissions, I, for one, and I believe some others, submitted questions before anything was formulated. And I sent copies of that to the then-existing Public Safety Committee members. Okay. Do you know if any of those questions... Well, it's probably unfair.
Frank, fair for you to talk to Dina, to read the reports.
When I asked this question two or three meetings back, I was told that they would be addressed in this report that was being given to the Public Safety Committee. Apparently, they were not.
No,
I
was very clear the last time that this was going to be a cost savings discussion, that this second part of it was based on the costs associated with the programs, the savings associated with the programs, which is what this is.
Frank,
now,
I'm afraid
those other questions,
other
I
people
can't
have your questions in our heads. So I really think it would be important. If you would look at the report, have any questions, certainly call Dina, and that would be entirely appropriate. And I understand that the probation department is going to be taking a whack at the recidivism question in the May or June meeting. I think there was going to be a follow-on discussion of that specific issue. Brian, I saw your name. Your hand up? Okay. I would just add a couple of things. One is that Dina talked to, she shared the report with probation staff, with the Justice Center staff, with the judges, and especially from the point of view of how can we improve the programs that we have. And they were all very excited about the results and generated a number of ideas that they expect can further enhance our results. I would also point out that two things that Dina didn't look at, again, this was a conservative study, she didn't evaluate the results when somebody comes out of our county jail or what happens when they come out of prison. We don't know whether they've, how many have a GED, how many are able to get employed. That's kind of beyond the scope of this. So I think that's really what the comparison is true if you said, as you said, Peter, if these programs went away, essentially would cost us about the same, but we do not know whether product is the same. So the other part that she didn't, address, which is entirely relevant, is the cost of building a new jail. And I can't remember the number of jail days, net jail days saved that was estimated. And, even if you question those numbers and cut the number in half, it's still clear that by virtue of these programs, we've been able to maintain a relatively low and stable population in the jail, and maybe not forever, but certainly have postponed the need to build a new jail. And since when the reports by jail consultants were finished estimating our costs, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, at $20 million to build a jail, 4 or 5 years ago, which would be easily twice that now, knowing what I've seen about other jail construction around the state, they specifically said that construction cost is one thing, but we really can't estimate the additional cost to staff this bigger facility. And they said, over time, that is by far a more salient issue, a bigger issue than even the construction costs. So every year that we've been able to delay building a larger facility, we have absolutely saved in real dollars in terms of staffing for that larger facility. Peter?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's fair, Martha, because unless I'm missing something, we could always elect not to build a jail by saying that what we're going to do is we're going to simply board out all the prisoners that we have. And it may be that it's cheaper to board them out than it is actually to build a jail and house them in your own county. That may be. But her calculation was assuming board outs of everyone. And that's how she calculated her costs. Now, it may well be that if she calculated the cost by saying, well, they'll build a bigger jail to put these new people in, it would come out even worse. I mean, that the drug court was even better because, in fact, we figured out a cheaper way to take care of our prison population, namely board them out. So, I mean, that's a different issue, is the decision to board prisoners out or house them locally.
Well, in fact, the cost of $20 million works out to 52 board outs every day of the year. So that's kind of where that breaks even. Brian, now you have?
Yeah, and I know you're trying to wrap this up, and maybe I can help a little bit. I don't think yesterday's report was the end-all of this. There's only five of us that even got that report, which we're going to get. I, for one, will be pushing for some information that we've yet to receive or can't receive. I beg to differ on that part. And it's going to be an ongoing process. I don't think we really have to set our minds one way or the other right now. And, at some point we're going to have to, because of the budget, we're going to have to do that. But I don't think we're anywhere near there yet.
Thanks, Brian. I think certainly Dina can come here and make a presentation to the full body. Okay. Anything else for public safety? Thank you very much. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McKean, Chair.
So I appreciate the amount of work that Dina put into this. We've gone back and forth. We've had a report before now, and it's really interesting. You're probably wondering what this has to do with WDIC, to sort of see where the numbers in terms of race and socioeconomic class and ethnicity fall out. In that report, I was really curious in some of her comments around the drug court and why there seem to be so many more white participants who were successful in the program that they were participants of color. And I remember her response being something like, it sort of reflected the population of the county. I think I started coughing at that point and I didn't get my response in, but I started thinking of how the population of the county does not necessarily reflect the population of the incarcerated and the population of the people who end up in the criminal justice system, that it is so very different. So that didn't quite, wasn't a good selling point for me. But it also just reiterated just how much more work we need to do, especially for the people who are indigent and who are struggling and trying to make ends meet. When probation started talking about the ignition into lock and the $1,200, I shudder to think about the folks who not only would have their license taken away, and hope that they will do a good analysis of what do those numbers look like in terms of people's ethnicities, their race, their class, their socioeconomic conditions, because that is a huge factor. I think this will be a good time to say congratulations to Duke grudgingly. Lighten the mood a little bit. The Orange Men were not in there. Orange Men fan. and to Butler for quite a game last night. I needed that relief. So those of you who are Duke and Butler fans, oh well. Let me share a number. Actually, I'm going to read a description. Minority employees are self-identified as belonging to a minority group as defined by EEOC. And I'm sure most people know what that means. And we get this workforce utilization report every month at a budget committee. It comes from our personnel departments. I don't know how many people pay attention to it. But it occurred to me that I should read this number to you as I was looking it over tonight, that of the 744 employees in our county, 39 are identified as minorities. I'll leave it at that. WDIC will meet on April 28th. I saw just today an email that part of her, I don't know if it's brain teasers or whatever the series is, but training series, is around making the business case for diversity. And I hope that what we are teaching or encouraging, and I remember our Deputy Commissioner of Personnel, is that the title, had done that training at one point. And I just hope that whatever it is that we are teaching or learning or we're attending in this, that I wonder how it's translating to how we're doing business in the county. If we're making a business case for why it's important, I want to put out there to ask people to think about how is it translating to how we do business in this county if there's a business case for why diversity matters. As a note, a community note, the PNC grocery store on Hancock Street is closing and will be closed, I think it's April 18th or 15th or 18th, somewhere around there. For those of you who are in this community who represent, I hope that you will make your voice heard, because this is a neighborhood grocery store that is in a community, it's in a neighborhood that's surrounded by public housing, which in itself indicates the economic levels of the people who live there, who don't necessarily have the transportation means or whatever it is to get to the other grocery stores across town. And so it's really important for us that there's advocacy that some sort of neighborhood grocery business stays in that neighborhood, because it's very important. All of this has a lot to do with diversity and inclusion in our county, not just in our employees and our workforce, but also in the people who we serve. And if they're having issues out there, they're coming in here, we need to also know that we're helping to support and make sure that life for them is the highest quality that it can possibly be with these services that we have to offer. That's my report.
Thank you very much, Leslie. Any questions? Okay. Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Health Committee will be meeting on April the 14th. We have not met since the last meeting of this board. I do want to bring to your attention one item. You may have caught it in yesterday's Ithaca Journal. The Civil War Commission, of which several of us are members of that commission, along with the county historian, Carol Kamen, are initiating a... it is a very preliminary program to establish a scholarship or two or three at TC3 for nurses. And they want to tie it together with a history program, women who served in the war between the states, and perhaps do some sponsorship. The number that I saw in the paper was they need to raise about $80,000 in order to prime the pump. But because it has a nursing aspect to it. I'm going to ask that at some point we have an update from Carol at the Health Committee on the status of it. The TC3 nursing program is one of the most successful in the state of New York. They put out a lot of nurses that are absorbed not just in our own community, but have jobs waiting for them before they graduate. So this is a very positive program. If we can, we might be asked to help support it in some way. That's it.
Thank you, Frank.
Oh, wait, there's one more thing.
Yeah.
Just to give you a heads up, and I don't want to steal any of Will's thunder because I know the Board of Health meeting hasn't taken place yet, but be aware that the rabies season is upon us with the warm weather coming, and any of you that like to hike or travel through the woods, deer ticks are at their best this time of the year. So follow the protocols that the health department has set out. If you need copies of those, Will or I can probably get them for you. But your constituents ought to be made aware of that, seriously, that it's the beginning of the season for both of those things. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Frank. Leslin?
I just want to point out, Frank, that in the county administrator, that we have begun our process of for interviewing and hiring for a public health director. So there are some of us who are on the committee, and it's long. And I need to beg your indulgence because I realized there were some words that didn't come out of my mouth during the public speak portion when I said Heather came by, Meredith came by it honestly, just her public service. That's because Heather, I wanted to congratulate her in being one of the 20 outstanding women you should know in Tompkins County.
Good.
Because of all the work she does as well, just being involved in this community. And I thought, wait a minute, those words never came out of my mouth. So I want to make sure it's added to a part of my public speech.
Did you want to say that?
I did. I did.
Well, I'm sure Heather's still on.
I did.
Thank you, Leslie. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dulicki for chair.
Thank you. Diane Braddock is one of the 20 also.
She is too.
Good.
That has nothing to do with my committee report. We met on April Fool's Day up at the airport, continuing our visits to the different divisions and getting presentations. The airport had a lot of good news, but since the airport will be giving a presentation to the legislature at its next meeting, I won't mention any of that. You'll all hear it firsthand from Bob. Ed Marks reported that after her 35 years of service, Cheryl Nelson will be retiring on April 10th. But what that means this year is that she'll be going from full-time to part-time, so we'll still be seeing her around helping us. We had a presentation from Highway on the updated 2010 Highway Construction Season Work Plan, which is mostly road rehab. But we learned that blacktop prices went up again on April 1st by a couple of dollars a ton, and that there's a real asphalt supply issue because as the refineries improve their plants and become more efficient, there's less and less of that bottom sludge, which is what we use to pave roads with. So there's more competition for what there is. And that combined with the governor's freeze on construction projects, other than stimulus projects, leaves our highway program somewhat up in the air this year. There's more than $2 million worth of work to be done. There's less than $1 million in the budget to do it. We count on state money, and we're not sure what's going to happen. Highway also included a review of the Hanshaw Road project. Many of you seemed surprised at the turnout at the previous legislative meeting. But since the legal announcements about eminent domain hearing made it clear that if residents want to have anything to say in the future under this eminent domain procedure, they had to get their concerns on the record. And I know that besides what you all heard more comments have been received in the office, and Martha made them official tonight. So the number of folks who commented, I don't think, should be worrisome to us all. 15 out of 70 properties was expected. The Red Mill Road Bridge project still is not finished with, because the state decided it could not accept the original design report as part of the final report. Mm-hmm. But instead of having to necessarily do this $50,000 final design report, there may be yet another middle ground, something called a simplified design report. So the last we heard was that staff was waiting for the template for this simplified report to be received. So maybe it won't be as expensive as we thought. And we had our first major presentation from Solid Waste, summarizing the proposals that were received in response to our request for proposals to implement single-stream recycling at the Solid Waste Center. Six proposals were received, five were responsive, three base proposals and two alternative proposals are being seriously analyzed. And Barbara very much wants us to have, and I certainly agree with her, that we should have a separate special F&I committee meeting, which would largely be an executive session, to which all legislators will be invited, and at which there will be presentations in some depth on all of these proposals. So if you're really interested in that kind of detail, I hope you'll be able to come. Finding a time of day when all legislators can come is turning out, as you all know, to be extremely difficult. Our original date chosen was Friday the 30th of this month in the morning at our usual time, but there's a good chance that will be moved to an afternoon time or an alternative morning time. I'm sorry, I can't tell you what it is yet. Solid Waste also reported that the trust company, Tompkins Trust Company, is a re-business partner of theirs, and as part of Earth Day celebration this year, the trust company is having a document shredding day. It's really on Earth Day, April 17th from 9 to noon at their East Hill location. Very appropriate. You can shred all the tax information you don't need once you finish your tax returns. And finally, Public Works is having another open house. There is the one tomorrow that you mentioned, Will, but there's one on
It's actually not tomorrow. It's actually Thursday.
Thursday, I'm sorry. Thursday. It's Thursday.
I misspoke.
There is another one the following week on the 14th, if you can't make it this week on Thursday. And the one next week is also starting at 12:30, and you visit each of four divisions. So that's the last thing I have to mention. And there's a resolution on the agenda tonight, which I have.
Are there any questions first for Dooley? Frank?
Dooley, one of the items you mentioned was that the governor's holding back on the stimulus money?
No, construction fund money from the state. Construction projects other than ones funded by federal stimulus dollars.
Oh, okay. Maybe I misheard you then.
Well, my voice isn't very good, so you could.
Thanks.
Have.
Thank you.
Pat?
I'm just not clear. Where does the Thursday visit start? Where are we supposed to go?
This week.
Yeah.
Will can tell you because he's going.
Bostwick Road, you started, it's all at the highway public facility.
So it's on Bostwick. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Past the bus garage.
Mm-hmm. It does not include the airport or solid waste. It's
correct.
Just it's just the four divisions at Bostwick.
Waste management, public works, facilities, and highway.
Carol and Pam,
just if anybody's interested in carpooling out to that, a car will be leaving at 12:15 from the parking lot here. Look for me. And I'm happy to give up to what three more of you could fit in my car for rides. This is on Thursday. While people are mentioning this, the honoring of the 20 women, including Diane Braddock and Heather, the date for that is May 6th. Mm-hmm. The Women's Expo is 4 to 7, and I'm not sure of the location. And I don't know if anybody mentioned the Homeless and Housing Task Force meeting tomorrow morning.
Sure. The tangents, you know, it's all right. Keep going.
And the Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services annual luncheon, to which we were invited on Friday at noon.
At the Women's Community Building.
Okay, that's a good basket. Pam?
That's all, Pat.
Just tidbits I picked up along the way.
Let's try to collect those during public legislative privilege. Okay, your resolution, Billy.
It has a very long title, Authorizing Acceptance of Supplemental Grant Agreement, number 2, Schedules A-4, A-5, and A-6, to the Master Agreement from the New York State Department of Transportation for Project Identification Numbers 3902.15, 3902.16, and 3902.17. That's Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. This passed our committee, and I'm moving it.
Is there a second?
Sorry.
Frank? Any discussion? All in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Julie. The Capital Plan Review Committee will meet this Thursday, April 8th at 3:30, and folks, you have a little bit of homework to do. We included the 2005 report of the Space Use Master Plan. Of course, three of you were on that original committee, so you can just skim it, I'm sure. There is a lot of white space and some pictures, but leave a little time to prepare for the meeting. Kathy?
I looked through it, but I didn't see, it's dated to the appendix, the... there's a chart that shows the state's preferred size square foot ratio per job title that we utilized for the original Space Needs Committee. Frank knows what I'm talking about. It was a Dan Winch product. It's helpful, and I don't know if y'all can put your hands on it, but it'd be great to have at some point.
Bet Ed could find it.
It's in our administrative manual, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I knew somebody would be able to come up with it. It would be great to be able to use it in looking at that plan in particular.
Joe, can you you'll dig that up?
Yes. Right,
great. Thanks very much. Thanks, Kathy. Anything else? Government Operations, Mike Lane, Chair.
Well, we met on March 18th. We'll meet again on April 15th. We talked about some of the things that we did already, particularly the broadband action with Google, which was pretty important. But I want to talk about a small thing that happened, and I think it looked well for Tompkins County. We were approached by the Perry City Quakers meeting at church regarding their feeling that they had not been properly assessed on a piece of property adjacent to their meeting house, which had indeed been the assessment roll had been repaired so that now they are properly tax exempt on it. But they were going back a couple years to 2007 and wondering about refund of payment. The assessment department had taken an initial look at it and felt that maybe they had made their application a little too late and in the proper way of doing that. This was taken back to the assessment department after our meeting. They've now looked at it, consulted with the county attorney's office, and I'm pleased to report that there's going to be a refund to the Quaker City Church because we've decided that it was a clerical error that resulted in the misassessment of this property as tax exempt. So it's only a few hundred dollars we're talking about, but it's the right thing for a great county like Tompkins to do, and I'm glad we're doing it. We'll be talking about some of the issues that we're proceeding with at our next meeting, including trying to haul together this committee to look at this broadband issue and the strategic plan for that, trying to bring in some of the characters that we've from the past that have dealt with this at the county level and also see where we need to go in the future. We believe this long-range plan is pretty important. We're also going to... we also spent some time talking about committee goals. We're going to take some time to look at some of the goals that maybe not weren't quite finished last time around, last year, and we're going to try to bring that forward. We talked a lot about the healthcare consortium resolution that we pulled, and I think that's kind of important. It was the only other resolution we had on tonight's agenda. The committee put it forward knowing that there is this question about the union representation on the oversight board, and we want to see that get resolved. Our county administrator, Joe, recommended that we hold action on this until, for at least a couple of weeks, to try to resolve that, let the union representatives talk with their people and talk among themselves to try to bring this to a conclusion that, that we can live with. Many of the municipalities are already passing these authorizing resolutions based on the original agreement, which had one representative from the unions on the voting representative. How that will be concluded, we aren't quite sure yet. We're sure it's going to be concluded in a good way because it means so much for all of the municipalities that are part of this consortium and also for the folks in the labor organizations. Because if we have to go back, it's just going to cost everybody more money. And we're going to kind of take our cue from our county administrator on this and hopefully bring it forward at our next meeting.
Thank you very much,
Mike. Any questions?
Julie?
It's not a question. When Mike is finished, I left one thing out.
Okay, Kathy?
I just wanted to make a comment and ask for verification. It's my understanding that the leadership of the local CSEA has been more than cooperative in working together to try and find ways to save the taxpayer and members of the bargaining unit health care costs. And working with Joe, I think,
I think that's true. I think it's just the inclusion of the state insurance department here that's kind of muddied the water a little bit, and we got to get it clarified.
Thank you.
That's very true. Thank you, Kathy. Anything else for Mike? Dooley?
What I forgot to mention is that you each should find on your desks a memorandum from Barbara Ekstrom and Jonathan Wood summarizing the proposals as much as can be said publicly about them. So I hope you found that tonight.
Okay. Thank you, Julie, and thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
All right, before we take up our last item of business, the minutes, I just want to say this is as long a meeting as we usually have, and everybody said, oh, it's a short meeting. We're only going to have almost nothing on the agenda. I think it's important that we talk to each other, and whether we have things to vote on, I think that the time that we have spent tonight hearing each other and asking questions and sharing ideas is really what we're here to do. So I'm cheerful about the fact that I think we had some substantive discussions and don't feel like we need to judge things by what time we left. So I want to thank you all for all your hard work tonight. Do I have a motion on the minutes of March 16th? Will moves, Carol seconds. Any suggestions, comments? All in favor accepting the minutes as submitted, raise your hand, please.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. I have a motion to adjourn.
No, executive session.
But you want to
adjourn. Okay, so I have a motion on executive. Thank you, Kathy.
To discuss.
Motion on executive session to discuss litigation. Pat has moved, Brian seconds. All in favor of the motion for executive session? Any opposed? Okay,
as a. Expect to come back.
We do not expect to come out of here with any to take any action, so there will be no action after this. So we are in executive session. Thank you very much. We'll take a couple minutes to shut down the cameras and begin in 5 minutes. Thank you.